From WXXI News, this is Weekend Connections, the podcast.
The gravelly version.
The gravelly version with...
Oh, jeez. See, you can tell we do this in one take because there's no editing.
Yeah, there's no editing. The gravelly version with the audio that's really all over the map. But here we are. And
oh, geez.
Should we start?
He's Evan Dawson.
Oh, hi.
I'm Megan Mack.
Hello.
Thanks as always for joining
us. You know what? Maybe what I should have done is call in sick today. And do you see what I've done there?
That nice transition.
It's a little bit of a transition to our first look at what we're reviewing this week on Connections.
That's right. A growing number of American workers say they can't take sick days, or at least they're hesitant to call in sick. They're worried about losing their jobs or losing status at work or not getting paid.
New York State's attempting to address this issue with a new proposal. So under the governor's plan, small businesses with between 5 and 99 employees would have to provide at least 5 paid sick leave days per year to its workers. The business community is divided on this one. We talked to Andrew Brady, a CEO from the Rochester chapter of Conscious Capitalism. But first, you'll hear from Jennifer Posey. She owns Hedonist Artisan Chocolates in Rochester. Her company employs 15 people.
I don't know. I still don't know. I'm on the fence about it. I have to hear more details because, like, what if, you know, I just hired 5 new people and they are, you know, sick with the first month and they haven't actually to see if they're going to show up and continue to be a part of Hedonist, which happens. We, you know, we hire people and they stay for about 6 weeks and then they move along. And if they've already used some of that sick time, then our staff that we have throughout the years, they kind of lose out on their raises and stuff. Right now, if everybody was to just get 5 days of sick time, that would cost us about $10,000 just right now. And then that would mean like one part-time person or many people's raises throughout the year. So I'm not really sure how I feel about it. So I'd have to really see all the details.
Andrew Brady, who is the CEO of the Accelerate team and the co-founder of the Rochester chapter of Conscious Capitalism, does this proposal fall under the umbrella of what you consider to be conscious capitalism?
Yeah, you know, I think as we were talking about earlier, there's been certainly a decline in worker power in their ability to organize over the last several decades. And so it becomes very difficult. A lot of times you'll hear a small business owner, I'm not saying this is the case for Jen, it sounds like she has a very nuanced version of what she would or wouldn't support. But many times it's, well, you know, this was an employee willingly took this job. And so they should have negotiated for more if they needed it. And it really, it doesn't take into account that kind of lack of negotiating power for many employees, especially if they're in poverty. They can't afford to, you know, have a few days off of unpaid and they're kind of on that razor's edge of whether or not they can make ends meet for that week or that month. And so, it does become very difficult. And even though you'd like to see as many folks as possible do this somewhat willingly, as business owners, I think setting a certain ground rules for an acceptable floor is necessary in a lot of cases.
Next, a conversation about anti-Semitism. There's been a rise in hate crimes and anti-Semitic incidents across the country. The news has left community members wondering how to address and counter these issues, both when you're just talking to people in day-to-day life, but also in the courtroom.
We had a conversation about hate crimes and hate speech from a number of angles. One was how to address the issue from a young person's perspective. In this clip, you'll hear a local high school senior named Aiden discuss where he hears anti-Semitic speech and how he counters it.
I think in American life these days, you'll most commonly see anti-Semitism just casually, like through like day-to-day conversations. You may hear like a snippet here and there. Obviously, there are the bigger attacks that are concerning.
Are you talking on the news? Are you talking in school?
In school.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm fortunate enough to go to a very liberal school, but I mean, occasionally you'll get that like little jab, little reminder of who you are. Yeah.
And when you receive that or when you're experiencing that, do you think the person speaking it is aware that it's anti-Semitic and is intentionally doing it that way?
I think generally people think that they're funny. I don't think it's necessarily coming from a position of like malice or anything like that. I think the biggest, I guess, my biggest worry with anti-Semitism now is just trying to kind of catch it at that early stage when it is just what someone thinks is like a joke, because obviously it does progress from there and eventually it crosses that fine line of like, when is it just anti-Semitism? When is it like just a rude remark that you see kind of as anti-Semitic, and when does it become incitement? And when it becomes incitement, then it leads to something bigger.
Are you more concerned now than you were? I mean, look, you're 17, 18?
17.
17 years old. I mean, yeah. You're becoming an adult and the life is changing. You're probably much more aware of the wider world, right? But, I mean, have you found yourself more concerned about it or less, even in the last year or two?
I'd say over the last year, I've become more concerned with it. Hmm. I've definitely become more, like, cognizant of it. Uh-huh. Growing up, I was probably more sheltered to it. Obviously, I learned about it growing up in Hebrew school. We talked about, like, the Holocaust and things like that, but I never experienced too much, like, direct anti-Semitism. Over the last year, there have been many, many attacks on the Jewish community. And I know when I leave the house, my parents are actually worried sometimes when I wear, like, things that kind of identify as me, as a Jew. Like, my dad makes me tuck my mug in David, and when I leave the house, my Star of David.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Just to sort of follow up on what you think maybe motivates some of that, we had a conversation about the Oscar-nominated films recently, and I mentioned that I saw the film Jojo Rabbit, and I was really moved at how it depicted a 10-year-old boy in the late days of the Third Reich who clearly did not want to be a Nazi and realized he really wasn't a hateful person, and finally encountered a Jewish girl and thought, this is not what I was told. You know, none of it. And the movie it's fiction, but it's a reminder to me of what we do to children when we raise them to hate people or to fear people. And I thought it was very powerful that way. So when you encounter anti-Semitism, even in sort of school or in the community, what do you think is sort of motivating that? Is it ignorance? Is it sort of taught? What do you think is motivating it?
I'd say for the most part, at least the anti-Semitism I've encountered, I think it's just ignorance. I don't think it's been taught, not by the people that I know particularly. But yeah, I think for the most part, some of that like lower level anti-Semitism that comes from people who are not so educated, it comes from a place of ignorance.
So do you talk about it? I mean, do you, if you hear something that sort of catches your ear, do you ignore it and sort of just not try to hear more of it, or do you address it?
I usually try to address it, yeah.
How's it go?
I don't know. I think people generally kind of try to brush it off, like the statement they made, maybe make a little excuse. But
I think people can be pretty defensive.
Yeah.
We'll close our week in review with a look at what might be the next amendment to the U.S. Constitution. It's known as the Equal Rights Amendment, or the ERA, and many Americans might be surprised about what the ERA is all about. It's a short amendment, essentially saying that women's rights are protected the same as men's.
Yeah, I think a lot of people might think, isn't that in the law already?
It's not.
Well, supporters of the ERA says it needs to be codified officially, and that's what this is about. So we talked to Amy Stevens, a trans woman who supports the ERA, along with two attorneys, Beth Cordello of Polano & Farrow in Rochester, and Kate Kelly, a human rights attorney based in New York City.
Intermediate scrutiny is the level of scrutiny that we currently have under the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment, and so women are not fully protected under our current constitutional regime. We do not receive the same level of scrutiny that other cases do, and that's very, very clear. Secondly, I would say that people that use this example of, oh, everything is going to be erased and it's going to be there's going to be no distinctions and no limits on what between the genders, and that is not the case. Many constitutional rights have limits already. None of them are completely unfettered or unregulated. When you think about the Second Amendment, the Second Amendment doesn't mean that there can be absolutely no regulation. The government just has to prove that there's a rational reason for having that type of regulation. So when you think about single-sex schools or you think about, particular programs that benefit women, those can still exist. There are programs that benefit people on the basis of race currently. So that argument is not only circular, it's also dishonest, that there will be able to be programs that benefit women. Clearly, the government will just have to justify why those exist. And like you said, they can justify that by clearly proving that women have been historically disadvantaged.
Okay. And it sounds to me, Beth Cordello, like the concern raised in this particular critique is similar to the critique of a number of recent movements. And the critique usually sounds something like this. You are not trying to create equal opportunity. You're trying to force equal outcomes, which, I mean, intellectually, I understand the concern, but I don't necessarily read this and think, oh, well, the government would be trying to engineer equal outcomes, all exactly the same, men in all field and women, men and women in all fields, exactly the same outcomes in terms of hiring, in terms of scholarships, et cetera. This doesn't read to me like a way to try to engineer equal outcomes. It does read more like a way to engineer actual equal opportunity. But I am not an attorney. What is your take?
I would agree with you on that, absolutely.
Okay, Kay?
Yeah, I mean, I think, first of all, why are we afraid of equal outcomes? I think that I think that women have been historically disadvantaged in this country. As you mentioned at the top of the show, women were left out of the Constitution, not by accident, but very, very intentionally. The framers of the Constitution were asked by people, including their own wives. Abigail Adams sent a letter to John Adams, who participated in the Constitutional Convention, and told him that women should not be beholden to a government that does not include them as equals or as participants. So even at the time, women were saying that we need to be included in the Constitution. I think all of these other red herring arguments, and, you know, you should just ask people, do you believe in constitutional equality? Do you believe that men and women should be equal in our most founding document? If you don't, then you're going to use all kinds of excuses. You're going to use procedural arguments. You're going to say it's too late, the deadline, the rescissions, etc. You're going to use arguments like, oh no, they're just trying to erase all difference between the sexes. None of those arguments are true. None of those are valid. If you believe that men and women should be equal in the Constitution and in our country, if you believe that equality is an American value, then we should put this into the Constitution, and we should put to rest all of these other red herring arguments.
I'd also like to call myself out for something. You ready for this? So you asked if Kim Ford Mizrui is an attorney. The answer is Kim Ford Mizrui has a degree from the University of Michigan Law School, 1993. The problem is, I made the assumption that with the name Kim, it was a woman. It's a man. Huh. So Kim Ford Mizrui is an attorney. It's a man. Warning that the ERA is not necessary. My fault. And I'm a pretty good example of what happens when you assume and you don't learn. So there you go. In real time, the host of Connections. Falling on his face. But anyway.
But I think it goes to show, like, a lot of the people who fight against the Equal Rights Amendment, a lot of the people who use these arguments are men. They often use women as a shield. They often push women to the front. They often have women as spokespeople. But at the end of the day, the people who are fighting to keep women out of the Constitution are men, not women.
Okay. Now, when it comes to why there is this sort of resurgence in interest in actually making this happen, let me ask a general question to both attorneys, and then I want to ask all three of our guests if they see the benefits that some of those supporters see. But generally speaking, people like Kim Ford Mizrui have been saying that the ERA would only prohibit sex discrimination by the government, and that is already prohibited under the Constitution. Kate?
Like I said before, that is not true. Any attorney who's taken constitutional law, which is a class that you take in your first year of law school, learns about the levels of scrutiny. This is the way that the Supreme Court decides whether or not a law can withstand muster, whether or not a law can stand. It takes that entire constitutional law course to understand the intricacies of the levels of scrutiny. But really, at the end of the day, women have a separate and lesser form of scrutiny under the Constitution. And so discrimination on the basis of sex does not get the same level of protection as these other categories. That is not true. That is patently false. And anyone with any sort of intellectual honesty would be able to explain that.
Okay. Beth Cordello?
So progress is not permanent, right? I think when the ERA comes up, people say, well, look at all these laws we have in place now. We have Title VII of the Civil Rights Act. We have the Equal Pay Act. We have the Pregnancy Discrimination Act. We have all of these laws and all of these court decisions. We're okay now, right? And the fact of the matter is as we've seen, for example, with Roe versus Wade or with other things, depending on the change of of who's controlling government or who's on the bench or who we're electing. All those things can be peeled back and can go away. And if it's in the Constitution, it's a guiding light into permanent thing by which we, it's a prism by which we look through all our laws that we pass and enforce, all our court decisions. And for that reason, it's necessary, even though we have a whole host of laws. None of them are permanent, and they've expanded and contracted over the years, and they're all vulnerable to going away, unless it's in the Constitution.
It's putting a foundation under what a society decides it wants to keep permanently.
Correct.
Okay. Yeah. And
when you think about it, when you think about the other amendments, like think about the First Amendment, think about the Second Amendment, think about what's been done with those since they were originally written and put into the Constitution. The things that they protected never could have been envisioned by the original founders. And that's what we're doing. We're putting something in the Constitution that will serve as a foundation that will be used to protect women and girls in ways that we can't even imagine now, in 100 years from now, in 200 years.
And that's another edition of Weekend Connections, the podcast. You can hear Connections every weekday afternoon from noon to 2 on WXXI, AM 1370, on WRUR, that's 88.5 FM, and on WEOS, Finger Lakes Public Radio, that's 89.5 FM.
We are also on the WXXI mobile app. Thanks to everyone who's called in to support their public radio station this week in our February membership campaign.
Made the goal.
Woo. He's Evan. I'm Megan.
I've been waiting for some celebration. Bells, whistles. Thanks, everyone. Talk to you next week.